This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now, you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Do you like pro wrestling? Well, we like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, Netflix, with little interest in the WWE archives, in the lazy river of wrestling criticism, sight gags, and a rampage match for your major return in AEW, and Invader Club, a first, a match I don't remember ever watching, but I did this time just for craps and giggles, from December to December 1995, the Ultimate Jeopardy match, and we'll talk about ideas WWE could probably take from this to make their war games a little better. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I am in Chris's former stomping grounds of lovely Scottsdale, Arizona, where the baby mamas are asking, well, where's the check, Chris? Also, special guest, Bobo the Wonder Monkey, has made his triumphant return after a very good year on the stock market for him. He got in cheap at Palantir. just a couple thousand shares, but you know, he's happy. How are you? How is your recovery? I've been asked by people to ask you.
I am now 2 weeks into being sick. I'm on the back end of it. It went from being a flu to being a full-on ear infection last week that has raged. I got ear tubes earlier in the year after the accident at the tram, and I've spent a lovely opportunity to test drive the ear tubes, which weep fluid on the right side at a near constant clip here and have for the last week or so. I do appreciate people reaching out and beseeching me not to retire from wrestling podcasting. I do appreciate being appreciated. I don't know that it's going to have any bearing one way or the other on if and when I make that decision, but I do appreciate it. Jeff and I are discussing a way to make this more worth our time, as it was brought to our attention earlier this year by some of our peers that basically what we're doing doesn't amount to a hill of beans. So
I don't think anybody really said that, but okay.
No. Remember when they said that no one on Voices of Wrestling has had any sort of criticisms to lobby at AEW's writing, and now the dominant narrative here at the end of the year, everyone's suddenly realizing takes that sound strikingly similar to thoughts that I had in the shower before I went to air on Saturday 8 months ago.
Interesting you say that. There's been some editorials and some podcasts elsewhere that, you know, the real problem with all this AEW criticism, Chris?
What? What is the real problem with AEW criticism?
It's the tribalism, and that we need to shut up and enjoy the wrestling.
What the hell am I supposed to do with that shit?
that this tribalism is far too toxic, and we need to be more understanding of these growing pains of AEW, and some of the follow-ups around it. It's like, oh, television is so hard in this day and age. I'm like, they started with national cable. They weren't a bunch of dumb hillbillies on cable access trying to grow their brand. They started with a Tiffany network. Don't give me that crap, okay? Don't give me this crap that I'm just supposed to enjoy things now, because it's one of those things where it's like, hey, I was enjoying Cody Rhodes and his Georgia instincts, and you told me, not you, but you know, the collective pretentious gatekeeping crew told me that this was bad for AEW, that we just wanted, you know, the New Japan style bangers and whatnot, and then. CM Punk came into AEW, and I was enjoying that. And I was told that was, you know, CM Punk's a meanie because he told Adam Page to listen to legends who might know a thing about wrestling or something to that effect. And then they ran both of them off, and they're successful over in the other company. But you know what? Here, have your 3.5 to 4-star banger every week. Take your spreadsheet and shut up, Jeff Hawkins. You know, that kind of stuff. And it wasn't
Hawkins, in the spirit of this new thought for wrestling criticism here, I would like to debut Dr. Nove's Dynamite review. You're going to love this, Jeff. Don't worry. It's just going to take a couple of moments here. So we started off this week with Jon Moxley and Pac, and they faced Orange Cassidy and Switchblade Jay White. And you know what? That was great. That was a disqualification finish. Next, we had Adam Cole defeating Kyle O'Reilly in a match to go up against MJF. And you know what? It was excellent. I loved it. Great stuff. And next, we had Ricochet versus Brody King. Now, this is interesting because we got like a little bit of a face turn, heel turn thingy going on here. And you know what? That was great. And finally, here in our main event, we had Mariah May versus Mina Shirakawa. They've been building this up. It was excellent. Exquisite stuff, really. Just great stuff. And the Continental Classic, what can you say, but it is great, and we got to cheer We got to cheer for the good stuff here, which all of it is. It's all excellent. Who doesn't love wrestling criticism? Thank you for tuning in to Shake Them Ropes this week. My name is Christopher Brino. His name is Jeffrey Hawkins. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Patreon. This is the hard-hitting criticism that you guys are looking for in the community, so we hope that we can get your Buck a Show donation. Thank you so much.
Thank
Wrestling's
you.
Great.
Thank you for that. Still time for our Ask Us Anything. Have a lot of good questions. Don't make them all wrestling related. Hey, we like talking music. We like talking culture. We like talking. Maybe don't go to politics, but anything else.
Politics is great.
No, no.
Hey, yeah, hey, I love all politicians.
No. but yeah, you can send those to me either by DM or crapgame13@gmail.com. Let's get into the news. Starting with, there will reportedly be quote-unquote very little WWE archive content on Netflix. The answer is quote-unquote not much. There will be all the current shows, all the pay-per-views, everything is going to be on Netflix. As far as your archives, though, there will be some, but very little. When everything starts on January 1st, they're going to have roughly 40 pay-per-views, will be the only thing up, and just intermittent, some recent, some from years ago. No WCW, all WWE, no Mid-Atlantic, no Mid-South, no World Class, none of that tape library stuff.
We learned nothing from the launch of the WWE Network.
People didn't really watch a lot of it, so that's what happened. And yes, Netflix's business model is based on clicks, so I would expect not. But at the same time, it's been kind of opined that maybe WWE Vault might be the gateway into that. I had suggested maybe Pluto channels or some such, because Pluto has a nice little service there and you could curate for various things. They have a TNA channel already, so who knows about that. Chris and I famously campaigned to be the archivist at Peacock, and my contact there just said no, it's not worth the squeeze. I don't know, Chris. It's one of those things where I have a Plex drive full of classic stuff, but I know the want to click onto things occasionally and go to a service where it's all at is good, but it's not cost effective. How do you get around that for such a vast tape library such as WWE, and since they own all the basically all the televised history of modern day wrestling?
Yeah, I think they've got to figure this out. The whole point of them assembling nearly all televised wrestling, with like some notable exceptions of like TNA, some ROH shows, and AEW. I mean, they basically are a one-stop shop for 60% of wrestling, and if you're taking just the American, North American market, something like 70-80% of wrestling. I think they've got to figure it out. Maybe WWE offers their own service.
I was thinking that maybe. I mean, look.
Like there are an archive.
You mean like
service.
A WWE network?
Right. I mean, essentially like a network, but without the stupid linear model that was doing nothing.
Like a subscription tier on YouTube wouldn't be the worst idea in the world.
Or even finding a way to syndicate stuff. My smart television does this thing. It has Letterman, just nonstop Letterman. Which is actually what I set the channel to. Oh, hell yeah, dude. It's awesome. It's great. I'll just kick on my TV. It'll just randomly be a Letterman episode. And also Hot Ones, the YouTube show, has syndicated their stuff out to the smart TV service. And basically it just runs as a stream. I think you could very easily not necessarily do the entire catalog, but you could have a 1987 Mid-Atlantic channel. Whatever.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind that as a playlist. It's one of those things, though, that I also understand, like, you would have to have about 10,000 subscribers type of a thing to make this thing even financially viable, to have an archivist who will go in there and label things and what. I mean, you could possibly throw it all up, I guess. You know, but I mean, if you want actual curation where I could find things, that'd be close to impossible. I don't know. I think the day's done, Chris, because it's also would be WWE's call, number one. Number two, Netflix wouldn't like it if they had to compete against things because, hey, we own the WWE content. And WWE, in terms of their history thing, would be like, okay, here's a Becky Lynch playlist, which were great. Don't get me wrong. On Peacock, I love the playlist that they curated. But for me, I'm a guy who likes stuff that's, you know, it's like me wanting a comedy channel to watch Jack Benny. You know, there's not a big market for Jack Benny 24/7 necessarily, but it would be something I'd like.
Yeah, I don't know. They'll figure it out at some point.
I don't think they will. I think they're just going to say, well, like, hope you have videotapes or hope you have DVDs, even though WWE DVDs are like dead now. So, I mean, where would people go other than the underground like Plex shares where, you know, there are people who have pay for Plex subscriptions.
Well, if they give up, what will end up happening is the internet wrestling community will create an informal but fairly substantial archive online somewhere.
And they will work against it. That's the problem I have is that, oh, you guys are trying to monetize our content. It's like, well, you're not using it.
Right. It'll be interesting. But I mean, especially now, it seems like pirating has really arrived at a sweet spot again where they know how to mirror things and you basically have no legal standing to stop that stuff.
Yeah, I'm just one of those people who's very frustrated at the death of physical media because it's now like, now I can't get access to things I wanted before if I hadn't bought them originally. And you're just kind of scurrying to find things that are now out of print.
I think it's stupid that I have to go and flip burgers and robots make art.
AEW's attempt to establish a WrestleMania in the U.S. show with All In Texas on July 12th at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas hasn't resonated completely. You don't say. On the positive side, the presale alone became the third biggest grossing event in company history behind the two Wembley shows. They had topped the 1.25 million U.S. gate, the Forbidden Door show in Toronto on June 25th, 2023, which was a previous North American record. We don't have a ticket number, and if they just sold very high-priced tickets, that could not be not a giant number of actual tickets. But the belief is it's around 6,000 sold, which isn't great for the on-sale of a stadium show, Chris.
Yeah, typically when you're doing a stadium show, you want more than 6,000 people in it.
If you look at some of these old stadium shows that they did, like
stadiums like that, so much anymore. Not since the Roman times.
Yes, but I mean, I just remember like watching bashes in Greensboro at a football field where it's like, you know, all they have like a bunch of folding chairs around the thing, and then bleachers are kind of sparse, or like they did like Cowboy Stadium for World Class and kind of the same. Yeah, I just think their expansion plan, in addition to their television plan, was a little bit too. They didn't anticipate the market being so saturated that, hey, maybe people decide to take their business only to one company. Let's put it that way.
It's really crazy that putting out bland television for the better part of a year and a half ends up resulting in diminishing ticket sales.
Bland television, you say?
Television.
I thought we were having good matches, Chris.
I'm not talking about that. I want to divorce it from the new criticism, 2025 criticism.
Okay.
That we're doing, modern criticism.
Fair enough. You know,
That was a bit of what I would call vintage critique, where you actually comment on the thing that you watched in a stylistic. Modern critique doesn't do that.
Yes. That's a thing of the past. That's dinosaur.
That's the criticism. Old way. That's old millennium thinking.
Oh God!
The negativism of the 20th century.
You are on one today. With the Janelle Grant lawsuit against Vince McMahon back on, Grant's attorney Ann Callis released a statement saying, quote, "We are pleased that prosecutors for the Southern District of New York have concluded that they can continue their criminal investigation while we bring forward new evidence in our civil case about the sexual exploitation carried out by Janelle Grant's abusers. For the last 6 months, Ms. Grant has patiently waited to hold Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and WWE accountable for the sex trafficking and abuse she endured at the company on a near daily basis. Her wait is over, and now look forward to sharing Ms. Grant's story," unquote. Jessica Rosenberg Taub, the attorney for McMahon, responded to Brandon Thurston regarding Callis's quote, saying, quote, Ms. Grant's representative's self-serving statement is, as usual, factually incorrect and intellectually dishonest. I'm going to say this again. I think Ann Callis is a little bit too much in the media. To be honest with you, I really just wish, but I understand it. I understand the point. I'll ask a tertiary question, Chris. Do you think any of this hurts Linda McMahon's nomination for the Department of Education?
No,
I'm with you.
I don't think the political class of people can be shamed into not taking a nomination.
Understood.
With the notable exception of maybe Matt Gaetz, but you have to really, really have it on you.
I don't think that was shame per se that made Gaetz drop. I think that was looking at math. But yes, speaking of these types of uncomfortable questions, Tessa Blanchard debuted in TNA last night at Final Resolution. The news was kept away from the entire roster. This is Fightful this time, as of the time of the details emerging, and even many of the staff who are usually in the know. We're told this was done intentionally as there was fear of backlash internally. There are some people that remain with the company that have remained friends with Tessa, but one person in the know said that the hope is that there's enough new talent to work with that haven't soured on her. Another source believes Blanchard will be on, quote, best behavior, as this is a major opportunity. We're told that the plan has been in motion for at least the last 2 weeks and was the decision of, quote, a top person in Anthem, unquote, and they were warned against by others in the company. It is not the work of new Anthem president Carlos Silva, who just joined the company. Plan is to have Tessa Blanchard involved by next month. She debuted last night, where she slated to work against Jordynne Grace and win. We're told that Jordynne Grace had pushed back on working with Blanchard. Tessa Blanchard left TNA in 2020 amid allegations of using racial slurs toward La Rosa Negra and bullying numerous talent across wrestling. We've never heard of a specific apology that was made, but she and La Rosa Negra posed for pictures together in recent years. The situation made her untouchable by WWE, who had interest prior to the allegations. There were a couple of people early on who pushed for her to join AEW in 2019 by some who are no longer with the company. You can figure that out. But it was made clear that talent did not want her there at that time. Let me get my biases out. I'm a Tully Blanchard fan, and I root for Tessa Blanchard to get it together finally. There's a lot of people in criticism and a lot of wrestling fans who, understandably, I think, some with an agenda, were like, I don't approve of this move because she's a racist. Okay, there were those allegations, and it appears she has patched those up with La Rosa Negra, and that is the person who was offended the most, because that's who the things were with. I know that she does training with Mercedes and Red Velvet. I don't know. I forget the bullying allegations. I believe Allison Kay was one of the people, and I think Marty Bell was one of the people accusing her of that. I would be more concerned of TNA, as she was their champion. She had the main belt when COVID hit, and then she refused to come back and drop it. Also going to say this, it's been 5 years. 5 years is a lifetime in professional wrestling. If you want, you know, of her father's career, it was a time where he entered the NWA in 1984 to being done with wrestling full-time in 1989. It was mostly the entire brunt of his main run. I'm not saying you need to forgive her, but I'm also kind of saying some people who want an apology want it done publicly and only if it pleases them. I don't know if this will work. I hope it does, because I know that there's at least one high-profile talent in both companies that want to work with her. But she has made this bed, and she must now lay in it, and if she's not on her best behavior, she's going to be back trying to work indies or CMLL But then again, she didn't drop the tag title she holds at CMLL either, so she wasn't exactly doing business on the way out yet again, so I don't know if anything's been learned. I'm just saying, if the same people who are deadly, deadly against Tessa Blanchard ever getting work in American company again until their pleas had their way, we wouldn't have Mark Briscoe on a roster because the only reason he's on a roster right now is because his brother died. And there were a lot of people who in retrospect, no, I had forgiven Jay Briscoe because Effie said, you know, he had done the work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there was no plans to bring in the Briscoes until Jay passed away. And, it you know, I understand it's a difficult thing, and I understand people's things like that. I just kind of go, you know, it's not a clubhouse, Chris. It's not a, and we all have to be friends to work. We can make money, and there can be sketchy people, and I don't need to know that much about them. And, you know, it's, I don't know, but I just want to know, is it my biases that are blinding me here? Am I blind to something? And she should be excommunicated from wrestling in the States forever? Or is it one of those things where it's like enough time has passed? I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you.
The mental image that's coming to mind is that Price is Right game where the yodeler is climbing the mountain
yes.
and eventually falls yodely, off of the mountain. Right? And so, like, the reason I have that in my mind is because we have several different facets to this.
Yes.
The easiest one, like, to sort of parse, because I think it's extraordinarily problematic, is her history of getting pouty pants and yes. losing her smile and refusing.
Happened in NXT during the Mae Young Classic.
She has
allegedly
a real big history of getting pouty pants, losing her smile, not doing business, and making extraction extraordinarily painful.
Yes.
So right now, one thing that's guaranteed with Tessa Blanchard is that however it goes during the good days, there will be bad days when this thing closes down.
Yes.
And do you want those bad days?
Can you stay ahead of
Yodle-hee-hoo. We're moving up the mountain.
And you're yelling, stop, 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 and it just keeps going.
Right, because right. We got several of those. Yodle-hee-hoo.
And I can see that for like a WWE or an AEW. TNA really has nothing to lose with it.
Right. Right, yeah, you know, but like, you know, if we're stacking it all, now we go back to the other issues in the past. Yes, she is made up with the person to whom she aggrieved with her comments.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, it's,
but not necessarily the bullying, yeah.
Right, and also, yeah, right, so like, it's one specific person, and it's almost like one of those things where it's like, yeah, okay, you apologize to one person, but there's six people that you were a dick to. So did you really do the work here? I don't know. I can't speak on that.
Let me pause you there for a moment. Question. When we say do the work, is it okay to not? I mean, it's one of those things where,
well, this
like
is where I'm going. Hold
okay,
on.
Okay, okay.
All right, so let's suppose you don't do the work. Now this gets us to a really interesting question, which is, should failing to do the work result in a career death sentence, or are certain things egregious, meriting punishment, but once that punishment lapses, regardless of whether or not you apologized for it or not, should you at least get another chance? So what I'm saying is,
okay,
maybe she did some bad stuff, but I don't think it should be a career death sentence, even if she doesn't apologize for it. I think it should, however, especially if you've not apologized for it, be something that you serve the full term of the sentence, whatever it is we decide, quote unquote, the sentence is, rightly and wrongly in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, I was going to go somewhere else, but I like your statement. I was going to ask this. On the doing the work thing, Because my first thought of that, I mean, look, Jay may have done the work, Jay Briscoe on.
Right.
On,
yeah.
But I also think of the reaction to Joey Ryan. If you recall that entire hubbub.
Dude, I don't know how. I mean, I do. I don't know how Joey Ryan could possibly do work.
No, I get that, but he's
like that would be something to me. I would actually say career death sentence.
I'm not the charge, not so much, but it's one of those things where what I'm asking is, who makes a determination that you've done the work, and do you need to do it publicly enough? Because Garrett Gonzalez over at Fight Game is like, well, she needs to really come out with a public statement, and she needs somebody to come out and vouch for her. So to let us know that she's done the work, as opposed to doing it quietly on your own because you really feel like you need to do the work.
I get it. I get it. But obviously the right answer here is a tribunal of five comprised of David Bixenspan, Garrett Kidney, Reverse Trevor, and a couple other guys.
Tribunal's three, by the way.
Well, all right, there you go. A tribunal of five.
Okay.
Well, there it is. So those three guys. Three white dudes from the city decide on some stuff, and I think that'll be good.
Well, you know, Trevor might be Black Irish. You never know.
You never know. You don't.
That might be too inside baseball for some, so let's move on.
Hey, I thought that was great.
I did too.
I'm gonna use a little bit of modern critique here of our own show. I think the show's going excellent.
Oh, now you're reviewing the show while we're doing the show.
Yeah, Jeff's doing a great job today.
You're incepting
the content really well. He really well kind of put together here as he presents the different articles. And I'm coming in and I'm doing some funny work here intermittently.
Bobo the Ombudsman Chip gonna come in. AEW Dynamite, 594,000.17 in the demo. NXT, 680,000.17 in the demo.
Well, yeah, but are they the right people?
Lowest rated segment was the end one for AEW, the Tony Storm reveal.
Always great to hear that your big reveal did the worst numbers.
It is, and it was the overrun too. That'll bring us into the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, whatever we had time for, Chris, I'll give you the chance if you so choose. For Deadline, ice cold takes 2 weeks. I gave my thoughts last week. If you have nothing, I can move on.
I got nothing because we got to talk about old Seth Rollins here with this promo.
Okay, I will let you start then.
Man, I thought it was outstanding. This is some of it. Maybe his best promo in his entire career. It really helped federate together the WWE meta story in the fallout around the Bloodline, making everything make sense, all these different moving pieces. Everybody's got differing motivations, shades of gray that make sense, points of antagony that make sense. People are, and ironically, in the absence of Vince, some of the weird things that Vince used to use is like aphorisms like, you know, cheer for whoever you want. We just want you cheering. Actually, for the first time in a decade, makes some effing sense. Like when you see cheer for Seth, cheer for Punk. Yeah, they both have a point. You can pick which side you're on and you actually can make a case to the person who's on the other side of the table. If your friend's, you know, on Punk's side and you're on Seth's side, you can make a case that doesn't make you sound like an idiot.
You can also make the case that Sammy's a spineless doofus for the most part because,
right?
Hey, remember when Roman kicked your ass for the title and then you went back to him? You know, that kind of thing?
Right. I mean, you know, one of the things they're always going to have to deal with is that Sammy joining the Bloodline made no sense whatsoever. We talked about that at the time.
Yes.
The 20 people listening to the show appreciated that episode.
But we know people. We know people who have relationships like this. Wait, he wronged you, and now you're his friend again. Well, yes.
Okay, Jeff, we're going in on me today, huh?
No, I wasn't talking about you, but okay. But no, like Punk, Rollins, Drew, KO, all of them have are all Cody, all and they all revolve around Roman Reigns. And Roman Reigns' horrible, horrible actions towards all of them.
Right. Well, and I like the Roman character too.
Same.
Because he is a guy, you know, the criticism is he doesn't say very much. That's actually sort of the oil that greases the gears right now with this character, because he's a problematic babyface.
He's doing the work, and he's not asking.
But he's like, not really doing the work, and that's what makes this complicated. He is on the right side of battles, right? He's on the right side of battles, but no, he's not out there talking to his troops and trying to smooth over old differences. And the Kevin Owens fissures festered in part because Roman Reigns never actually did the work. I think he is an interesting character now in this new iteration. He's a babyface, but he's a babyface with some clear flaws, and one of those flaws is a failure to atone. He's still basically, as far as we know, looks at his conduct over the last few years as means to an end that was worthy.
He's the most self-involved of everybody because it's all about his legacy as the OTC, and he hasn't changed babyface or heel. He's all about Roman, and that makes for an intriguing thing, because him being Roman doesn't have ulterior or doesn't have what's the word I'm looking for? Aspirational motives.
Right.
It's just about his power. So he's not going to help anybody, but he's not looking to punk anybody either, in order, because he's not at the top of the mountain yet.
Right, but that it just begs this open question, which I like, of suppose Roman gets power back.
Yes.
What are we getting then?
What, the Ulafala? Is that what it's called? The necklace? You know, the ring? Right. What if he gets his precious back? What happens?
He gets his precious back, and then what?
Yeah.
I think... You know, if I could maybe lobby one piece of constructive criticism, I think a thing that some of the people breaking away from the Roman orbit, like a Kevin Owens and a Seth Rollins, should be putting into all of these guys' ears is, do all of you ever ask what Roman's endgame is?
Yeah. Oh, is he just going to form the bloodline again to screw us all again?
Do y'all ever talk to him? You know, like, Sammy, you love Roman, right? When's the last time you two talked?
Well, Sammy's more of a Jimmy guy, or Jay. He's more of a Jay. This is more out of loyalty to Jay, which also makes it kind of interesting because they're all
there for Roman.
Yes.
Still.
Yes. There's a little bit of a disconnect there. I'll stay on Raw for mine. I adored this New Day promo as well.
Yep.
The disingenuous, we didn't do anything wrong. All we did was say our opinion. We're not even being mean to anybody kind of a thing.
We didn't even beat him up.
Yeah, we didn't even beat him up.
Yeah, would say that. That was
congratulations on doing the least you could do. Woods. I like this kind of, I like this turn, but the only thing I have is I am a little bit sick of all three shows now having have acts like this, because Gargano and Ciampa are kind of doing the same thing over on SmackDown, and then every other tag team seems to be splitting up because of this transfer portal. I think Triple H is going to pull a McMahon here and just do a hard reboot with both shows being 3 hours, and we're breaking up everybody, and then we'll reform things as we see fit. I just think that's a horrible idea, but I did want to give some credit to this New Day promo because I really, really did enjoy it.
Yeah, I like the New Day promo. I really enjoy Gunther's growing disdain for Dominic Mysterio.
It's so and good.
It's so good. And it's the thing about the writing here and the antagony on this show is they're finding something new beyond face and heel, which is, I effing don't like you. You rub me the wrong way on every single level. And I work in a company in a sport where I can act on that and beat the crap out of you. Dominic Mysterio on every level is anathema to Gunther. Gunther is, you know, if sure, cocky, absolutely, but an extraordinarily hard worker, you know, and
worked hard to transform his body, worked on the indies, you know, made his way through NXT and up through the system. And Dom is the Nepo baby.
Yeah. Gunther had to do work every step of the way to get to being a world champion level. I mean, there were some of us who thought that Big Boy Walter was more than enough to be a competent champion. I love Big Boy Walter. I thought he kicked ass. But the guy worked to become this Gunther character who is, to me at this point, a completely different, you know, just a different entity altogether. I love the antagony. I loved watching him beat up Dominic Mysterio. I love Dominic Mysterio for his part with the two and just, you know, just constantly like flicking Gunther over and over and over again.
We have the anathema to stupid babyface syndrome, Chris, in the form of Eddie Thorpe in NXT. Genius heel. where he has figured out a way to get a title match without all the work. And there's been other podcasts that have absolutely heaped huge amounts of praise for how this ended up. What say you?
Oh boy, I think the Eddie Thorpe turn is an interesting way to heat him up, but it's extraordinarily problematic. You know, speaking with a New Mexican perspective, if I may, for just a moment. I have a number of friends who are natives, who are wrestling fans. And they have been very excited about Eddie Thorpe and are not thrilled about the Thorpe turn.
Using the "my people have been oppressed" type of angle for
that stuff. That stuff, but also couple that with him grabbing Ava and actually, like, you know, wrist grabbing and stuff. Like, okay, that sat a little icky with people. Like his heel turns basically involve, you know, getting physical with women out of rage. That's not a great for the first Native American indigenous representation on NXT in how long? Like, since, not, I'm not gonna say since Tatanka, but like, it's been a minute. I can say positively that I know that that moment in particular sat uneasy with a lot of my friends.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a new perspective I don't think has been out there, because it's been mostly overwhelming praise because the Ava character is such an incompetent boob of a manager that someone finally tricked her type of a thing and did it, you know. And
dude, he like grabbed her a couple of weeks ago.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
I
would maybe submit to the people who have had this, now he's gotten into the match. That's cool, but like, there's a lot of heel turns that don't involve getting physical with a woman and beating her up.
True. I cannot speak on this because I was a fan.
I mean, certainly you can turn heel by well, yes, but even back in the 80s, Jeff, if anything, this bolsters my opinion. Even back in the 80s, a surefire way of getting heat and
yes,
ensuring your heel turn was roughing up a woman.
Unless it was Baby Doll, and then you got babyface pops for sexually assaulting her, Magnum.
yeah, but then sometimes she was also sympathetic too.
Yes,
when
yes.
She, yeah, when
yes.
she when she was a ba- and then when she was a babyface and she was sympathetic, if you did anything to her, then it was bad.
You're right. You did not go the way I thought you were going. I thought you were going to join in on the praise. So I mean, that's something for me to kind of take a step back and go, well, maybe I'm wrong to encourage this type of stuff. My other co-host is indigenous in Canada, And he he was like, I've been waiting for a talent to be this and to be smart as opposed to a stereotype. So it was one of those things. So I will take the yin with the yang in consideration as I go forward. It is your turn.
Okay. What else happened here on La Raw?
We can go to NXT if you want.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's time to change gear to NXT because beyond that New Day promo, as you said, was exceptional. Main event: Rhea Ripley and Raquel. What are we doing with Raquel?
She's just there to get heat.
She's just cannon fodder.
Get heat and get beat. That's what the thing is. I am kind of looking forward to this Saturday night's main event tonight to see what they do with Io and Liv. The rumor is that Charlotte Flair may be making a comeback.
Interesting.
To challenge somebody.
Interesting.
So that'll be the thing. I thought I had teed up something up for you. When I went to NXT.
When you went to NXT,
your favorite baby face who isn't a baby face now seems to actually not be a baby face, possibly.
Which one is that? We're talking about NXT, this Jeff. Are we talking about
Kehlani Jordan?
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought we were talking about the Gabagool Mafia.
No, that's its own thing. It's interesting.
Because some weeks they're face, some weeks they're some weeks they're heels. You never know with those guys. They're crazy.
Stephanie Vaquer beaten up in the parking lot. And Kehlani Jordan happened to be around to make a save for Julia. And she always seems to understand Julia's Japanese. What she's trying to say is, I think you're going to get your wish, my friend.
I think they sort of have set the seeds with this. In the face turn made sense, but it's like, or the initial face run made sense, but I really do like the type of character where, kind of like a Kurt Angle, to know you isn't to like you. It's something else.
I just love
you. Think that to know you is to love you because you're a star.
When I was at Michigan State, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah? I can't find a Kehlani Jordan on Michigan State because her name wasn't Kehlani Jordan at Michigan State. kind of a thing. I think they're towing the line a little bit too much. And it's one of those things with now they have Evander Holyfield's kid in there. I'm like, you're not going to give him a NXT name, are you? I certainly hope not.
It would be great if it was Foreman. If his last name was Foreman. Evan Foreman.
Muhammad Foreman.
Muhammad Foreman.
And then we're doing the whole, tag teams breaking up all over the place. I am a person who I now never want Axiom and Nathan Frazier to break up.
Never.
I just want them to continue
squabble forever,
miscommunicating and doing Gift of the Magi type of things where they're now, again, Ava is booking them multiple times on one night when she said, you can't wrestle twice on a night.
I want like an episode where they try to make up to each other, but inadvertently trying to do something nice for one another, end up doing something that kind of screws each other over.
I got you a world title match tonight. I'm injured.
Against Obafemi? What?
What? Yeah. And unfortunately, it looks like, Fatal Influence is already in fighting too. I'm just like, what? Not everybody has to fight. Oh, actually, they're not the worst one. That worst one is that, what was the team that faced Hank and Tank?
The OTM.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. They've been on three times and they're already squabbling, I think. Or am I thinking OTM or am I thinking the other football guys?
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
I can't remember.
No, I think it's I thought that was OTM.
Okay.
But it might be the other football guys.
Hoggins is racist because he doesn't know his
I want to just get on that right quick. This is what happens when you go months not effing characterizing people.
Or like, give them names you can't pronounce.
Because I know who Jada Parker is.
Yes.
Who's the person who used to manage OTM. And she has a clear, distinct character, was an athlete in college. I mean, they've characterized her. I have no idea. The two tag teams, one was a face and one was more of a heel team.
Right.
And that's basically all I can tell you about either one of them.
Can I take next or do you want next?
Take next, please.
Because I'm going to AEW.
Oh, it was a great show. Are we doing vintage critique or are we doing this modern?
We're doing whatever.
You want to go vintage? Okay, fine.
Tony Storm gets a giant pop. And so we've been planning this return. We're not holding off for a pay-per-view. We're doing it at Winter is Coming in Kansas City, while also building Thunder Rosa as the next opponent for Mariah May. And so we bring her out. I don't mind her not being in the Timeless Tony. I get that it was over, but to me, that's number one, a heel character. Number two, not a serious enough character for a world title run. I like athlete Toni Storm for this. Don't get me wrong. But we brought her out so that Thunder Rosa could do a sight gag with a sign. And then we put her on a Rampage match for her big comeback. I forgot if it was against Harley Cameron or against Shazza McKenzie. But either way, it's Rampage. It's a dead show. This is a dynamite act. You put your stars on your show where your stars are. I understand trying to spread the wealth, but as I said last week, it hasn't worked. So it's time to bail on that and just try and get the eyeballs on your Wednesday A show. And Toni Storm is your A women's act in this division, and you're just going to bring her to come back on a Rampage match when she's not even on World's End in a few weeks. I don't get it, Chris.
I don't get
the sight gag pissed me off because I laughed at first, and then I just went, no, that's bad because it's mixing comedy with your main event.
Right. No, it's the sight gag was like a Roadrunner or Coyote holding up the sign of, oh no.
Yes.
I found the whole thing goofy. I don't love having someone come out after a big match. Like, it made Mina Shirakawa and the entire Mina story feel very incidental when she was sort of a key part of the whole love triangle. You know, so to have that just sort of happen, I mean.
Apparently she's unavailable for the next pay-per-view because she has to be on a Stardom show. So they rushed it through,
right,
as opposed to waiting.
Morons. The money match here is the love triangle title match, right?
Yes.
It's all three people. Now Mina is jilted by both, and she's back to kill both of them. That's to me the money angle here. So
I was not. I'm going to say this and I'm going to get people going, well, you didn't see her in Stardom and all these matches and stuff. I was sort of not moved by Mina Shirakawa being a main event style wrestler. Let's put it that way. If I'm wrong, point out some matches for me to watch. She's not bad. her biggest struggle was with her top for the most part. I was like, okay, this is a fine women's match, but this isn't a main event caliber women's match that AEW wants. Let's put it that way.
No. I think... Is some of that Mariah May, though?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Because like Mariah May has improved. And
but she
has
probably
personality.
Had to call that match, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I would say she was probably calling 70% of it at least.
Maybe, oh yeah, she's the heel. She's calling it, and
yeah.
I don't know if the referee could speak Japanese necessarily.
You don't have to speak Japanese. You just have to call moves.
No, I know that, but Mina has to understand them.
I know, but I mean, when wrestlers talk about this, they know what suplex is, and a lot of the Japanese words are cognates.
I wasn't pushing hard on this, Chris.
Japanese people can understand wrestling English, Jeff.
Jeff Hawkins is the new Tessa Blanchard all of a sudden.
Wow. I'm sorry. You know what? I'm gonna take over this show proudly here and try to
Hiroshima Hawkins over here. Just talking all that. No.
Naga Hawkins.
Not gonna work here anymore. Go next, please.
Okay. I want to talk broadly about the Continental Classic.
Okay.
I think the continuing of this tournament, while there's supposed to be a hostile takeover, is so profoundly undermining to whatever the crap John Moxley and his little doofus faction are supposedly doing. And it's strange to me in the limited amount I see wrestling commentary, which is largely what, like, you know, my YouTube recommendations will slide out there. It's strange to see people humming about the Continental Classic and apparently not observing the fact that this tournament and all that it stands for flies in the face of what John Moxley is supposedly trying to do to AEW for AEW as AEW's champion.
Can you answer to me what exactly he's trying to do? Because I don't even know anymore.
Well, yeah, he's trying to make AEW great again. And a lot of people used to think that phrase was just a bunch of crap coming out of somebody's mouth, like saying make bicycle great again doesn't mean anything. But in recent years, we have had a reassessment of that phrase to it means good, good, goody, good, good. So he's going to be making AEW good, good again.
All right, I cut you off there. I hated that promo he did, where he's just so being frenetic and charactery, and it feels, and they're now referring to him as a general, as if he's running a cult. And I'm like, I just think he wants wrestlers to be badasses and somebody to come and try and take the title away from him. And I'll get to the story in a second. But the thing that made me angriest about this thing was them calling Jay White, Orange Cassidy, and Hangman Page Team AEW. We just went through this crap with the Elite, the Golden Elite taking over the company. What will Team AEW do in the Blood and Guts or Stadium Stampede? Blah 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 blah. Now they're a team. What? No.
I think they asked a lapsed pro wrestling fan who watched the WCW versus NWO angle in the 90s what they remember of it, and they've just booked this invasion angle around the limited drunken history that lapsed fan provided them.
No,
because they will occasionally do things like Team AEW, but forget that the whole reason you have a Team AEW assembled is for the final battle.
Yes.
And that, like, you got to make that team. Like, we want to see the Avengers assemble. It's not just five baby faces who are not ice cold. You need to actually create drama in the Avengers assembling, putting aside old differences, coming together for a common cause. Like, and also have a heel group who are dastardly, who are trying to stop that unification process from happening. None of these things, though, again, it's a great show and I loved every moment of it, none of these things are actually happening on AEW. And it becomes extraordinarily frustrating because why do I care about seeing the Death Riders defeated? What would even be the conditions of defeat?
Okay, that gets to my point, is that if you have a team AEW that needs to overcome the interlopers coming in and taking over the company, then number one, there needs to be a final vanquishing of said team. And there has never been that, as long as, you know, we had the Pillars joining together or whatever. We had, you know, we had them going up against the Bucks and Okada and Jungle Boy and whatnot. It's not to just create new NWO to come in after old NWO has kind of been beaten. They're still around and still cutting promos and whatnot. You know, it's not, here's new interlopers coming in to try and take over this company. That crap gets old after a while, because it's like, can anybody control this effing league here right now, as opposed to a bunch of guys who work here, get together, and they fight, but they don't get along with each other, and they're here to represent the company, which, God knows. Again, corporate fealty to me is lazy booking. You can be honored to fight for Jim Crockett and you know, the NWA, but you are still the world heavyweight champion, Ric Flair.
And like, corporate fealty is also like tool bag behavior, right? Like,
yes, you know, it's heelish.
It is.
We're
right?
A family.
Like, it's that. Like I. It's, you know, I you know, proudly. When someone gets fired from your job site, you're like, well, I'm proud to be an employee of the tram or whatever it is, right? like no, that's asshole behavior. No one likes that guy. You know, the cool person's the person who's trying to, like, stand up for the workers. And I mean, the much stronger rebuttal against Moxley is not, wow, you're besmirching the black and gold brand of AEW, sir, but rather you're beating up all of our coworkers. You're not standing up for us. You're bullying us.
Yes.
And you're being a cry bully.
Why did Orange Cassidy pull Hangman Page, by the way, again, apologies. Yeah, they're doing a redemption story for Hangman Page, which is ridiculous to me. After he burned down another of your top babyfaces' houses 2 weeks later.
No, his parents' house. His mother's house. Yeah, yes. Like, that was purchased by Swerve with his own money that he made from working. And then again, without any repentance whatsoever, Adam Page is now getting redeemed.
Is Orange Cassidy concerned about his tag team record having a blemish? And that's why he's pulling off the guy who wants to kick John Moxley's ass, because actually, I want to be the one to kick his ass. Why don't you just wait until Hangman gets done and then you can inflict your beatings also? This is so dumb to me that it's like, oh, he came and caused a DQ. Did you lose any money over it? Have we established that the pay window is open again, Dusty? Because it's just one of those things where it's just like, okay, Hangman wants to beat the crap out of Moxley. Let him. I'm done wrestling with him. You beat him up for a while, and then I'll take whatever's left. Although 3-on-1 babyface on heel is not exactly the uplifting underdog story you're wanting to tell when the heel is saying, I will challenge all three of you into a four-way.
Oh, see, what? But if you were actually writing with any degree of depth or nuance, This is a tremendous opportunity to invert expectations. Allow me to explain.
Oh,
so,
please.
Now that we're several weeks into an extremely coherent Death Riders takeover, wherein they have a clear agenda, they're beating up people constantly, anyone they declare basically nerds in so many words, they're going up and they're beating up the nerds, and they do this multiple times an episode, and it's getting really tedious. Now, at this point, you have earned the narrative point where three guys can get Moxley and get a one-up on Moxley to end 1 week of television on AEW. Give us a false feel-good moment. And the next week, now Moxley comes back with his boys, and he's pissed.
Yes.
Because he could not abide that. And now people, blood will spill, heads will roll, and the harm brought upon him will be dropped fivefold. Biblical-style wrath,
Chris,
on the following episode.
I need to ask you a very important question. As a man who does not know how to write a story, or you know, really has no experience in such things, are you telling me that a good way to book for a four-way for the title is to have one of the competitors actually beat the champion to make it seem like he could possibly win the match? Is that what you're telling me, Chris?
I think you could even have a better moment, Jeffrey, where you tell a simple story where all three of them, if they actually could somehow combine their powers, actually could beat the shit out of Jon Moxley and the Death Riders, but they can't do it. It's a tragedy, you see.
Ah. They can't coexist?
Right. And that's how Jon Moxley and the heels get the win.
All right. I have one last thing, and if you have anything after that, you can just complete your list. Matt Cardona, the former Zack Ryder.
Oh, yeah. White hot.
That said, best promo in this company this week. Gave me the who, what, where, why, and how. Gave me some emotion. Spoke into the camera and was doing an old school bring them into the seats type of promo. Compare that to Ricochet. He looked like Ric Flair. Because Ricochet is playing cocky guy. And it ain't working. It's just
he
not.
Stinks at acting. He's such a bad actor. He does fine flips, but oh my god, this man is a vortex where all charisma goes in and dies. He is the Unrizzler.
He's the Unrizzler. He does an off look before he starts, as if he's posing for a picture for somebody. He comes in with his snappy dialogue, but he's only speaking to Renee. He's not speaking to anybody he's fighting or anything like that. Oh, I still got this MVP card. Mm. He's wearing this suit that, I don't know, I think this suit looks terrible.
Ricochet is great.
This looks like a Tully Blanchard off-the-rack special when he's trying to tell you he's custom-made like Flair. I was thinking about this. I'm like, okay, we're going to turn Ricochet heel. Maybe an interesting choice, as long as he doesn't say a single damn word. Please. We've reached the pinnacle of Ricochet, I think. And it's unfortunate because, oh, he's going to go somewhere where he can have bangers and they know where to use it, how to use him.
Yeah. It was called Lucha Underground.
Yeah. Do you have anything else?
Adam Cole just continues to just be.
Oh, we have to go here now. God.
Do we have to? We're not. I don't. Wouldn't say we have
we
to.
Should.
Go. Yeah, like Adam Cole is. It's watching paint dry on the microphone and in the ring.
Paint watches at this Adam time. Cole dry.
Paint and grass get together to dry and yes! grow and watch Adam Cole matches.
Why is Kyle O'Reilly mad at the Kingdom for how they treat Adam Cole when they kicked his ass a few weeks ago.
And the Kingdom are all of a sudden earnest and sincere and legitimately concerned. And Matt Taven and his goofy haircut absolutely does not sell this crap in the slightest.
This is how we wasted MJF coming back. Okay.
Like, Matt Taven doing serious like work, sincere work, has literally the Sideshow Bob doing serious work energy, where it actually Sideshow Bob feels more real and convincing than Matt Taven.
If this were a well-built feud and the crowd could stand it and stand the players, Kyle O'Reilly would have won that match against Adam Cole to face MJF and lose. And then just sets up another stepping stone now for Adam Cole to finally get that big win. But instead, we're going to go to MJF basically hitting him with a ring and getting a pin, I think. How do you give the ring to babyface Adam Cole? I just don't see it. It's
Oh, and then Adam Cole comes out and delivers the white hot Dolph Ziggler promo of his life the next week.
How dare you besmirch the fantastic promo skills.
The one note song that
it
was
should
Dolph
have been
Ziggler.
Me. Okay. Yeah.
I work harder every week, week in, week out, and I give my soul and I do it.
And I steal the show every week.
Every time I steal the show and I go out there and I try.
You know, we try not to mock people, but I guess it's the season.
Yeah, no, I'll mock the powerful.
Let's go to Vader Club. And my selection, as I was perusing matches, I came upon this ECW match from 1995 that I don't remember if I had ever seen. And it's a war game style match called Ultimate Jeopardy with Raven, the Eliminators, and the Heavenly Bodies originally. Supposed to go against Tommy Dreamer, the Public Enemy, and the Pitbulls. Like, all right, I'd semi-forgotten the Heavenly Bodies' very short stint in ECW, which was between the time they had gone back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling and Tom Pritchard getting his hair cut, dyeing it blonde, and being teamed with Chris Candido as a personal trainer, leaving poor Jimmy Del Rey in the lurch, but this was that time. This is the last match of the Heavenly Bodies together in this iteration.
Whoa.
And I would say I watched Smoky Mountain in college, and then eventually I got access to all the things. So I watched them from the beginning. They are a very interesting team. Started when Cornette went to go form Smoky Mountain, and it was Stan Lane and Tom Pritchard. Tom Pritchard, if you did not know this. Dr. Tom Pritchard, I apologize. I forgot to give his medical degree something. Doesn't have a medical degree. He's the Doctor of Desire, Chris. But Stan Lane and Tom Pritchard were originally the Heavenly Bodies. Tom Pritchard was the original person penciled in to take over for Dennis Condrey in the Midnight Express because Stan Lane was still a part of the Fabulous Ones in Memphis, and it didn't look like that team was going to break up anytime soon. But Stan Lane made a business decision to come into the NWA to team with Bobby Eaton, and they became a rather fun version of the Midnight Express, possibly my favorite of the two. I have a soft spot for Condrey and his Southern sleaze, don't get me wrong, and I think Jimmy Del Rey does that, also capitalizes on that. But Jimmy Del Rey came into the picture when Stan Lane went to be a... He didn't want to work the road. They had worked the road after about a year within Tennessee and Virginia area in Smoky Mountain. And WWE came calling and asked Stan Lane to be an announcer. So Stan Lane took his dashing good looks and his hairpiece, and he went to WWE to be a second-rate Tony Schiavone for the most part. So they needed somebody, and there was a young guy who had been a state champion in Florida and been working the pros for a while. He had been an enhancement talent, one of Mike Jackson's guys in Crockett, gone by the name of Jim Backlund. It's a very famous squash match with the New Breed where I think it's Chris Champion just punches him in the face trying to do a clothesline. It is brutal to watch, but taking on the name of Jimmy Del Rey, Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey, they became the next version of the Heavenly Bodies, and probably the version you know because they had that run in WWE. So they're in between gigs. Cornette has nothing to do with them, so they come in, and Paulie brings them in and uses them for two nights or one night or whatever, and they do this War Games match. And it's very interesting, this War Games match. It's one cage, and this is from December to Dismember, which is not on video. This match can be watched only if you own the DVD set, I believe the Blu-ray DVD set of WCW of the War Games, the three-disc set that they came out with when they were still doing DVDs. And I, of course, bought this up because I had no access to War Games at that time. And I don't believe I ever watched this as an extra, but there are some interesting things. The previous matches on the card that night determined who got an advantage of 6-on-5 and 2-on-1 for the first period. That is why Stevie Richards is in this match, I believe. I think that's how this went. But the Eliminators beat the Pit Bulls. Raven beat Tommy Dreamer, which gave them 2 out of 3. And then before this match, the Public Enemy beat the Heavenly Bodies. And then during the course of the match, there'd be a coin toss to see which team got to send in somebody, which is a nice little touch to get around things like, if the babyfaces have an advantage, you can all of a sudden then just start loading with heels, which is something I think WWE should do, because the way that, I mean, having one War Games with a babyface advantage, you need something in there to kind of spice it up a little bit. But ECW being ECW went to the extreme in spicing things up. And every individual in this match had a stipulation if they took a pinfall in this match. This was not submission or surrender. This was submission, surrender, or pinfall. And here's what they were. If Raven lost, whoever defeated him would get his valet, Beulah McGillicuddy, for a week. Tommy Dreamer would have his head shaved. Big thing in territory wrestling is shaving the head. The beautiful locks of the head.
Public Tommy Enemy, Dreamer.
Who was already going bald.
I know.
The Public Enemy, although he's still holding on to that thing still. They're retreating, but he's trying to rally the troops. Public Enemy would be forced to wrestle one another. The Pit Bulls would be forced to split up, and whoever defeated them would get their valet, Francine, for a week. The Eliminators would be forced to leave ECW, and their manager, Jason, would have his head shaved. Again, Stevie Richards would be locked in the cage for 5 minutes with the members of the opposing team, and the Heavenly Bodies get the easiest one. If they lose, all stipulations for their team would be enforced. Hey, this is our last gig. You can't do anything to us. Screw you. Thing. But I also like that. I think some of these War Games matches, which are just kind of thrown together because people are feuding, I think they need the stakes raised. So it's like, okay, if I lose, I get this. But if I win, I get this. I think that would be an interesting thing for WWE to take from this as well. The match itself is, there's no commentary because it is a DVD extra, and there was, and this wasn't released as a commercial tape. It's dull, but it's fascinating to watch. Like watching Perry,
man, no, I
Perry Saturn
feel...
jumping off the top of the damn cage over and over and over again on Tommy Dreamer. I'm just like, that dude's knees. He was a crazy man in his youth. This is a very young Perry Saturn, you know, still very vibrant and stuff. But go ahead. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, I just, ECW for me, Joey Styles brings so much of the energy to this show. And is what makes ECW not just any other kind of lo-fi hardcore wrestling, only with people and names that we know and remember or whatever at this point. I the absence of Styles, even like a rougher, younger Joey Styles, is definitely felt here in this match.
This is a fight. This is not a work rate match by any means of the imagination.
And that's where Styles shines. Styles is not amazing at saying the Japanese moves, though he did try. What he is amazing at, I think, for this company on commentary, is selling the shock, the awe, the unmitigated, wow, I've basically conveying, you've seen wrestling before, but you've never seen wrestling that's as psycho as this.
Yes, and this is a psycho cage match in so many ways.
And that's like, where Styles would be really useful.
Like, the Smoky Mountain version of a War Games was you handcuffed people to the cage to quote-unquote eliminate them, and it's okay, but man, boy, it feels low rent. ECW also in the mid-90s at least, like that 94, 95, 96 period, sneaky, sneaky good tag team federation between, I mean, look, you had Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck at Cactus Jack and Raven. You had Bad Company go through there. You had the Bruise Brothers go through there. You know, the two Harris brothers, they're nothing special, but the brawling in ECW helped them. You know, you had Malenko and Benoit, you had Public Enemy, you had the Pit Bulls, the Eliminators, the Gangstas, the Heavenly Bodies. You had the Luchador tag teams that would come in there. Eventually you'd have Van Damme and Sabu, but I'm not talking about them. I'm just talking about guys who had already worked other territories and things like that. In addition to some of the new guys, like the Eliminators, I was a big fan of them in like 95. Total Elimination is one of my favorite tag team moves. It always looks awesome. And it always like the ones they would do on Rey Mysterio that where they'd almost like kill the dude. It would look like at times. I absolutely love that. It was gritty. It was grimy. It was in darkened arenas and it was about violence, but it was about different styles of wrestling too. You'd get your technical wrestling and stuff like that before everybody got poached. It was a very interesting territory with people who were in between jobs, people who were coming in back and forth. Ron Simmons did a stint there. That's where on this card, Steve Austin is on this. I believe this is where the three-way, because some of these matches are shown on the TV. I believe this is the Steve Austin versus Mikey Whipwreck versus Sandman triple threat for the title before Steve Austin goes and becomes the ringmaster in WWE. He had been fired, so Heyman brought him in to cut promos on Eric Bischoff. And you can see a lot of Stone Cold in those promos, and of course, takes a lot of Sandman's act with him when he decides to become Stone Cold, even though he won't cop to it. But if you must desperately watch this match and you don't have access to the DVD, hit me up. I have access to it as long as you don't spread it around. Any other thoughts on this match as a whole, other than Joey Styles stuff?
No, you got me, as we've been talking, you've had me captivated in looking up Stan Lane and his hairpiece, which apparently made its debut in Smoky Mountain Wrestling in 92 when he was teaming with Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Yes, because Tom Pritchard loved to play with his hair. I think Stan Lane
right. And Stan gets that. I watched the promo as we were chatting. Tom Pritchard is playing with his hair an inordinate amount in this promo.
He always
clearly rubbing it in to Stan Lane, who looks like Bobby Eaton in the first wig that he bought.
He kind of has like a little spiky thing going.
Yes,
in the
it's
hair
the
system.
Bobby Eaton hair. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, that's a fun run, too, in Smoky Mountain, is when Eaton comes to join the Lane and Pritchard Heavenly Bodies. I think we watched one of those matches for Vader Club, or I thought about it. It was the Rock and Roll Express and Arn Anderson versus the Stud Stable versus the Heavenly Bodies and Bobby Eaton. That feud is a lot of fun with kind of a tweener, Jimmy Golden slash Bunkhouse Buck, Ron Fuller. The chicken man in WCW and Dutch Mantell kind of being the go-betweens between, Ricky and Robert and Arn, which is an amazing kind of, they cut some amazing promos in that time. Maybe I'll set that for a Vader Club
there,
if you haven't.
There
already
were
done
some
it.
People in Appalachia, some rough looking people in Appalachia who actually got to see some pretty fun wrestling. But one of my favorite things about those smoky wrestling audiences is the shots of the crowd. Hoo boy.
Oh, that is
man.
That's a microcosm of early 90s America right there, my friend.
Yeah, man. Hoo boy. Smoky Mountain is worth it just for the crowd watching.
Well, Chris, we'll get to do Vader Club next week.
But we're gonna do the Fit Finley thing. So what happened? I actually, in advance of that Vader Club, probably watched more matches of Finley's than I've watched for any wrestler since. And I just have been having a hard time finding the definitive match. The upshot is that I really enjoy Finley, as you might imagine, Fit Finley ruled.
We may, because I don't know if
I might give you just like a smattering of like enhancement matches, like, three little, and because like he had one against Mike Enos that I actually.
Oh, that sounds fun. I like Mike Enos a lot.
Right, so. We're talking about Mike Enos, so it's not like you're gonna get a main event match here, but
doesn't need to be.
No, dude, it's actually a good match. It has like a good little story to it. It's enjoyable. So I think what I'm gonna end up doing is putting together just three or four of my favorite Finley enhancement matches, mostly from the WCW era. I don't know. WWE Finley in the aughts just doesn't do it for me. It's okay.
I don't want to do Continental Classic content for that holiday week after. So when we record, I may come up with two Vader clubs. I'll come up with the Vader club, and we'll use those second ones for the second show in addition to the AMA if we need it for filling space. But if you have questions, please send them to me, crapgame13@gmail.com, or DMing either the Shake Them Ropes account or crapgame13 on Elon Musk's X, where you can find me. I sometimes copy my tweets over to Jeff Hawkins at Blue Sky, but Blue Sky is wearing down on me. But we are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media about 20 minutes after Dynamite ends. It's called The Dynamite Show. It's myself and Paul Ace Fontaine thoroughly deconstructing that night's Dynamite. Free on YouTube, also free the next morning on your audio podcast feeds. Look up Fight Game Media. Chris is a teacher. He's a learner. He's a lover. He has plugs now.
It's true. I'm a joker and I'm playing that music in my song. So if you want to learn that song, you can hit me up on Instagram. My name is Chris Novembrino, Novembrino. Novembrino is my name-o. You can go and check out my Spotify. Apparently not a lot of people have been doing that recently. I went on there. The monthly listens have dropped prodigiously since the initial release. So let's get those back up to over 1,000 again. Probably isn't going to happen. But if you want to, you can go and check that out on Spotify. If you want to learn guitar, bass, drums, piano, songwriting, singing, how to operate and edit music on Logic. I used to say I could teach about modern podcasting, but seriously, a lot of my techniques are way out of date at this point. So I can still teach you a lot about music production, all these sorts of things. Heck, if you just want me to write a song for your sweetheart, hit me up on the Instagram. I'm happy to oblige, or you can beg me not to retire. These are also things you can do on the Instagram. Again, thanks to everyone who sent off well wishes. I really do appreciate it. I'm just having a laugh is all. That's all. But I do appreciate it.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.